Blog Talk Radio.
All right, it's March 19th, 2023, and we have almost a full slate of people in the switchboard already. So, Scotty, take over.
Yes, sir.
You're on.
All right.
You're on. Oh, by the way, one thing. One thing. If you're not talking, please mute your phone. It saves a lot of hassle. Thank you very much.
Right.
Enjoy
and if you want to join the conversation, press 1, please.
Yes, 810, you're on. And Paul, I believe that's Paul, you're on.
Greetings to your rabble-raisers.
There he
hey,
is.
Paul.
Greetings, Paul.
There's our man.
Appears we got some good news, eh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to be official.
What, Scotty?
Right. Yeah, we shall wait for it to be official, right?
You got.
Yeah, right now it's still not official. In fact, right now he's petitioned the monitor to have another rerun election because he's concerned, if I understood the paper up in Alpena, that there might have been some retirees that didn't get a ballot.
Oh, really? Where in the hell was he during the general election? Where was he?
Right.
Yeah.
What do you have to think?
The membership has spoken.
He'd won?
Pardon
Nobody
me?
Understood what that was. I don't know why.
I said, would he have the same concerns if he'd been the winner? Would he be concerned about all the people that didn't get a ballot or whose ballots did not reach the Ohio?
Well, I doubt that very much. Although our union is very honest, I doubt that he would have a concern. No, Paul, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Could be wrong.
I don't know. Paul, have you seen the letter that Bob King wrote to the monitor? I've never agreed with a damn thing Bob King has ever said, but a lot of the shit in this letter, brother, I salute you. I'm sorry, Ray Curry, the membership has spoken. Please leave. Just go ahead and leave quietly. Quit being a fucking crybaby.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
See, I didn't read it. What was the letter?
Bob King
is asking him to step down.
Hold on.
Who has a copy of it? They're a better reader than me.
Adrian. Adrian.
I have a copy, but I have to get to the computer. But
leave
he's asking him to step down for the sake of the organization.
Yes.
Wow.
And that, you know, he's saying that, I'm just paraphrasing,
okay.
That, you know, we're going into negotiations. We've got the bargaining convention that's immediate coming up. We don't need this going on.
I'll quote a little bit of it. It is in the best interest of this membership to swear in the next president, whether it's Ray Curry or Sean Fain, before the bargaining convention. I encourage all candidates in the monitor's office to work speedily toward the outcome. And I hope and encourage all my high road and everyone to come together and work in unity when the votes are counted. And
wow,
he's just saying, no, it's over, it's done, let's move on.
Yeah.
I got it pulled up. Do you want me to read it or are we good?
All right.
I got it
pulled up. Please.
Go ahead and read it.
All right. It's a headline, former UAW President Bob King opposes any delay in finalizing UAW election. Dear Neil Borowski, reference UAW Monitor, I am writing to encourage you to complete the UAW runoff election process as soon as possible. As you know, this is an extremely important year for bargaining with UAW-represented employers, especially in the auto sector. Also, as I am sure you are aware, the outcomes of auto bargaining will have a major impact on UAW bargaining in other sectors. Once the election results are determined, Everyone, in my opinion, has a responsibility to pull together for the sake of the membership to achieve the best contracts possible, regardless of which candidates we supported in the elections. With the UAW Special Bargaining Convention starting on Monday, March 27th, I think it is imperative for you to report the results as soon as possible. I understand both presidential candidates have standing questions and protests regarding details of our first ever membership-wide leadership election. I respect the right of any candidate to pursue objections or protests through the proper channels of post-election appeals. I think asking you to delay the announcement and or final counting of the remaining challenged ballots is detrimental to the overall UAW membership and full preparation for the upcoming bargaining. In bold print, it is in the best interest of the membership to swear in the next president, whether that is Ray Curry or Sean Fain, before the special bargaining convention, and I encourage all candidates and the monitor's office to work expediently towards that outcome. It is my hope that all candidates will take the high road and encourage everyone to come together in unity to work to get the best possible contract for our members in every sector. This clearly can be done while also pursuing post-election appeals. Sincerely, Bob King, retired UAW president.
Wow.
Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah, thank
you're
you,
welcome,
Jeff. I'm going to get 8101. I think it's Stephanie, maybe. Is this
it
Stephanie?
Is. It's Stephanie. Hi, everybody.
Hi, sweetie.
Hello.
I'm here. I'm going to go on mute unless I have something to say.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. That's good. All right. Stephanie's here. We can start the show now. Let's go. Scotty.
So what happened this last week was they moved the ballots from Detroit back down to Dayton, Ohio again.
Yeah, how
so
many times are these ballots going to move, and when are we going to get these results and make it official?
They're doing the shimmy shuffle game like the Bucket Brigade, folks. We've seen this shit. Come on.
Yeah.
Cancel them ballots. Call the election. It's a done deal. Ray, I'm sorry, but your IEB appointment is flipping over.
There and I go to Washington.
Amen.
D.C.
You're here, here.
There you go.
Calling the election now would be kind of consistent with UAW policy. Anybody who's ever contested an election knows it doesn't really matter what your objections are. Basically, you can spend 2 years taking it to the public review board, and they'll basically tell you full of crap that you're full of crap. Your arguments are null and void, and that should be the case with Curry. And we can't afford another term of a UAW leader believes that the best way to help our membership is to work with the company. Anybody that's got a brain knows that policy's been another failure.
That is absolutely right, Paul.
Hey, Paul, think about that time. I think it was when we were giving up all our classifications and we turned down the one contract and we appealed it because they let trades vote on the production side. It took them 3 years. We also had office general elections through there. It took them almost 3 years to honor our appeal. They said we were right, but seeing how elections were coming up, what was it, in 4 months? Just let them stay.
Yeah. The public review board has been very inconsistent over the years. They've waffled on their decisions. They just tend to basically rubber stamp what the International Executive Board wants.
True. I am liking how the membership's coming together Monday and tomorrow, rather, and we're going to walk on our sidewalk, and we're going to let them know inside our house. Yes, Mr. Fain, that's our house, not yours. That, you know, it's time to say goodbye. You don't have to leave Detroit. You got a couple other appointments. You know, you got the Brandon appointment, I think, for sure. And I thought you had a couple other ones right there in town. But you just don't have no more business in that house. You can keep your money in that credit union downstairs in the basement. We know about that. Go ahead, folks.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
My question is about these ballots. being moved back to Ohio. Can anyone tell me where I can look that up? And did they do it by sealed container? Because no one, I mean, I haven't seen anything. So that's why I'm asking this question.
Good point.
Adrian, I'll go ahead and send you that information as soon as possible.
Yep. It was a
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It was a Detroit Free Press article, I believe. They give that information in there.
That's correct.
I sent some of you guys the video of the vehicle that they sent them over with. Was that bus?
How many ballots is it?
1,508 if it's just the challenge ballots, but I heard it was the whole shebang, so that's why I said they're doing a bucket brigade. They're going to change them ballots. Is anybody, I mean, they're not, you know what I'm saying? It's, why move them up here, to be, then move them back there, then move up, I mean, how many times they got to be certified, how many times they got to be moved? They should have been voided out. If anybody knows anything about an election, they should have been voided.
I agree with that.
I do,
as
too.
As far as the number of ballots left, and I'm going to reference the same article that I'm going to send you that Scott mentioned, Adrian. In that article, Detroit News, it said 600 ballots. Still.
Why didn't they handle
them? Okay. My understanding today is that they're still working on them.
Why didn't
Do we know what the total, I mean, the what Bain has and what Curry has vote-wise? Do we know that?
Last I read was something like all Fain needed was 35 votes. That's the last that I had heard.
Okay.
Or
that
read.
Was the last I seen, and then all of a sudden Team Curry was asking for it to have a whole new election. Because he knows there's no way, you know, it's done.
But that was denied. The monitor denied him that. And the number, the last number that I had was total for all the regions was 68,881 votes for Ray Curry and 69,386 votes for Sean Fain, which would get 50.2% to Curry's 49.8%. And from what they said numerically, is everybody's correct, numerically, Curry couldn't
catch
change the result out.
Why
right.
didn't they count the day of the election? Isn't that generally the practice, that they determine then whether those votes are valid or not?
Well, they should have validated these ballots before they ever even mailed them to anybody. Apparently, whoever called and requested a ballot could get one, any Tom, Dick, or Harry. So, you know, if they would have been validating these people before they sent our or spent our union dollars to mail them out to all these needless people, then we wouldn't be having this problem.
That's right.
Right.
I got
That's
five
right.
of them. I got five postcards myself. So they could have taken four and spread it around.
But the reason that they ended the vote in Dayton last time, is this is what they said anyway, is that they rented a space to count the ballots. And that Saturday afternoon, that lease expired. So they had to move it to a different location, which is cockamamie. So they moved them to Detroit. And now they're going to move them back to Dayton. I don't understand any of this. It's bullshit. It shouldn't be allowed. That's all I can say.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, because I remember the same thing about the lease running out. And I was wondering, well, why you just didn't ask for an extension?
Absolutely.
On the lease instead of coming to Detroit, you know, and then I thought it would be completed here. And now...
Right.
You're saying you're moving it back. Well, you had to lease someplace. Yeah, you had to lease someplace to move it back.
I don't buy this shit for one reason. Think about this.
Go ahead.
They had the election for one number, one vote all through here. So they've had spots for all this time. So you're looking at yearly leases. Don't bullshit me. That was done in late fall.
So
where's this Merriman Group located? Where's their business at?
I don't know, but what I'm just trying to say is when we voted for one member, one vote, that was in the fall. So they did the yearly lease because then they had to keep the ballots there because then they had to do the general election, so they kept it there. Now they're doing the runoff. If you do the yearly lease, you're only looking at about a year and 5 months, 6 months. Somebody, there was no reason for these ballots to be moved other than do it. They're going to do the, you know, the switch and jive and switch or whatever you go. That's why he says, Bob, I understand. Think about what I think he did. Call in early, call in often. He knew about being able to get a ballot from anybody. So how many of them ballots the first round were counted? Think about that one.
It definitely causes doubt, and anything that you do in an election that you can avoid to erase doubt from the voters should be done. And moving these back and forth like that is doing nothing but making everybody suspicious that they're, even if they weren't.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
It's not a good practice. I don't know who's allowing this. If I was a challenger, I would have said, I'm staying right here with these ballots. I'm not leaving. So wherever you want to send them, you're shipping me with them.
Yeah.
To answer the question that was arised about the Merriman Group, they have their headquarters is Hamden, Connecticut, but they have an office in California also.
Oh.
What in the world?
If you look at our original ballots for the referendum, they came from Hamden, Connecticut.
Huh.
Quite a racket they got going on.
Yeah.
What was the issue with Salem's ballots? Why didn't they count them then? Was it all for the same reason or different reasons?
Yeah, why? I guess they couldn't validate them. But if Sean it is got enough to win, it those 600 doesn't matter, does it?
Exactly. This is all needless.
Yeah, call the election.
They're trying to say that every member's vote should count. What they're trying to sell it as.
Yeah.
Well, then explain why we had those return to sender votes. Return to sender ballots, and no one has given us in writing on a report the definitive amount of those ballots. Now, some question came up about me and different numbers. The reason I did that is so that people would pay attention to the fourth status report. It has nothing there about the return to sender ballots. It has nothing there about how many challenge ballots. It has nothing there about how many voids. Every election that we have ever held always have those numbers on it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like there's a whole different set of rules for this election.
I guess so.
Well, at least Curry's trying to change the rules anyway. Up to the
and
monitor.
The funny thing is, he wants to redo this runoff, right? He wants to redo the runoff because of this and because of that. Sorry, but if we were going to redo anything, we'd redo the whole thing because these problems have been here since day one. So it's not fair to the original people who ran.
Yeah.
To say, okay, now we're going to redo it.
I understand what you're saying, Terry, but they purposely effed us because we're going into contract negotiations. There's no way in hell you could start off with another general election like we did with all the candidates. I'm sorry. I wished it was possible because I don't think we can delay starting the bargaining, can we? Adrian, I don't know if we could do that. If we could do that, and say, hey, we're just not going to open up bargaining until the end of July because technically our contract's supposed to be good until, what is it, September 14th midnight, I think?
Yeah, September 14th. I'm going to get
three. They're doing it earlier this year anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to get 313 on and 7. Oop, I just took him off. Took whoever said carry off or somebody off. JJ, I don't know. We had a lot of callers. Yeah, 989, I'm putting you on right now, I think.
Did you lose Sharon Bell?
Hold on.
Okay,
no,
am I on?
440, you're on. No, Sharon, you're here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
989?
Yep. 989.
Okay, I don't know much about everything.
I mean, neither do I.
Adrian
so.
Knows a lot.
Yes.
But my question is we're paying for this election out of our union dues, right?
Right.
Yep.
And
where is this money coming from? Is all this
question.
Protest, everything, what's going to happen to our strike fund?
It shows up in the other one, too.
Well, they're not supposed to use that for anything else.
Huh?
That shouldn't come out of the strike fund. It should be coming out of the general fund.
General fund.
For elections.
It should.
Okay, well.
I'm just saying
should.
It should. Listen to the words, because I don't want to get charged with she said this.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm telling you, it should.
Right,
yeah.
And
yeah,
I think it's,
it's
coming.
Like
I think
a never
it's eventually
fund for this.
Coming out of our strike fund.
Right, I agree. Something
that's
come
what's
going to
happen.
The only thing that comes out of our strike fund is people striking, and they can take money for organizing. And then there's also Stephanie at the convention. They said there was 15% of the interest money of the strike fund went to some other fund and I can't or account, and I can't remember what that is. Maybe Stephanie was. We get none of the interest off the strike fund. That needs to be noted too, because that's just ludicrous. I'll shut up.
Yes, I'm sorry, but there's so many corrupt people in there.
Yeah,
I think it's going
to
come out of our strike fund.
To answer that, it spills over into the general fund, so they can use it for whatever their expenses are. I don't think there's much accounting there. I do want to, you guys raised the, you know, one of the reasons that they said that they're going to, that they suspended the election was to, because their lease was up. I do would like to make a note that it was announced after, both on UAW.org and pretty much every communication that came out about what was going to happen, that the ballots were to remain at that facility until a later count. Well, if your lease is up, you're not keeping your ballots there. You don't get to occupy space that you're not leasing. So it's a lie.
Well,
good evening, my good brothers and sisters. It's JJ.
JJ.
Hey, JJ.
How y'all doing?
Very good, sir.
How are you doing?
Well, I guess I understand that. Okay, lease was up, but what the fuck are they doing going back?
Right. There's no reason for it. Absolutely.
All they needed to do was tell the people they were leasing from that they needed some additional time and show them some money. That's all it would take. But one thing that concerns me about this election is we're supposed to be following UAW rules and practice. Although it's seems like a waste of time. Every time I ever write an appeal, I pursue it all the way to the public review board. And one of the things that I learned from doing that, it's basically what it boils down to elections. You can't wait till you lose an election, then protest on the basis of things that you already knew about. That both the courts and the UAW have ruled against that. And all these things that Curry is complaining about are things he knew about before the election. And therefore, on that basis, his election protest should be null and void.
I think you have 7 days from the closing of the polls to appeal an election. Being that this is an international election, I don't know that it would go through the appeals committee and the public review board and all that. It might. I would think it would have to go straight to the Department of Labor, but I'm not sure because this is the first time we've ever done this.
Well, my point is the things he's protesting are things that were pre-existing, he already knew about.
I agree.
The Public Review Board told me that you can't wait to see whether you lost an election or not and then protest something that you had previous knowledge of. And
that is true. Once you see an offense, you're supposed to report it immediately.
You still have that in writing? I remember you got that back in writing, if I remember correctly. If you got that in writing, we might be able to smoke his ass that way.
Yeah, finding my stuff in my old files might be hard, but that's what they told me. UAW and court have ruled consistently on that. You can't wait till the results of the election are in to protest something that you already had previous knowledge of.
But they are claiming that they filed a protest prior to the results.
Tiffany, I want to bring something to everybody's attention real quick. I was looking at the last LM2s and 990s with a friend of mine, Thomas Adams, and he brought some, I didn't even see it, but he brought to my attention that the International Union spent alone $200 million last year on something called Other.
Oh.
And it looks like it's going back to that, the PR firm they hired in New York, I believe they were out of. It looks like if we're paying $200 million a year for a PR, we can start giving pensions ourselves to our employees and just discuss people. Let's march on our house, get rid of these scrubs.
Yeah, who votes on this stuff? Who approves that crap? That's what I want to know.
$200 million.
I'm pretty sure that needs to be approved by the membership.
They hired them to try to improve
the you, that is a drop in the bucket. You start looking at these LM2s, and Scott, you know what I'm talking about because I know
what you're saying.
It's unreal. I mean, it's what we got to be over billions playing around.
They hired them to try to clean up our image with the membership. If they want to clear up their image with the membership, then all they have to do is go down and plant floor and start representing people the way they want to be represented.
That's right.
I'm going to tell you something. On the LM2, the staff medical funds count, that's for staff members at the UAW, that is valued at $72.2 million. And that's all theirs, babies. That's your International Executive Board. That's your officers. Are they really worth that? Come on, people. This is a gross injustice.
Yes, it is. I agree.
What about when he got caught twice at the beginning of the election, and that was okay?
Say that again, Scotty.
When Curry got caught cheating at the beginning of the election, twice. But nobody wants to say anything about that, right?
Are you talking about the email,
Scott?
You talking about the email?
Yeah, that was one of them, yeah. I think that was it.
Yeah,
and then also, how did he get vetted when he got caught taking tickets?
Stephanie, have you heard this last one? I'm hearing stuff out of over in Lansing that they might have some information on him taking money from vendors for this election, campaign contributions. That's where that scandal came out of things. He was using that as a diversion. If we can prove
it wouldn't surprise me.
Vendors, he's gone.
Yeah, that's not acceptable.
There's somebody posted pictures of KPP's LM2s. There's like $400,000 missing that they can't account for. It's unitemized.
$400,000.
That's from one local. And they got it marked as per diem. But none of it's itemized. So, I mean, that plays with what Jim was saying. Now, I got to support what Paul said. The biggest thing about this, the fact that since it is unprecedented to stop a vote count based on ballots that should have been verified, not only is it not a valid complaint, even if you posted it in advance. He held the station that helped to create the problem that he's filing the protest against. Who the hell files a protest against their own dereliction of duties? That's foolish. And as far as the stopping of the vote count, you're talking about setting a precedent for future elections. It's never been done before. If you permit it to happen and there's not one protest against them stopping the balloting, invalidating those ballots, in the future elections, you know what you got to look forward to, because they're going to say it's past practice. This is the way it's always been done. Well, what do you mean? This is only our second one. Well, that's how we did it last time, so that's how we're doing it in the future. They're going to hold yours, what, 2 weeks past what you guys should have already had an answer for based on ballots that could not be verified at the time of the counting. And they've taken it out of the custody of the observers. That doesn't happen. It's never happened. I'm done.
That's why I said they should have been voided and the election been called right then and there, sorry to say. And if Sean would have been behind, I guess it would have been, oh, well, wouldn't it, Ray?
Right. He could file a protest now. I would think that he's got grounds for it. If he can't get a resolution through the monitor, you might have to take it to an outside court.
Well, we need to go to the Department of Labor, and our save is that this whole time we've been contacting the monitor about the things that we don't agree with. So we have a paper trail of our complaints. Does Curry?
Right.
I'm sure he's got something, at least an excuse. What I'm going to say is, really, we got to just get together, go in front of our own house. If we make an embarrassment out of him, I think he'll sneak out the back door. If not, I'll get shot or beat up or something. But if that's the case, I think the membership will come to my funeral. All right? I love you guys. Come on. Let's get our shit together. Let's all show up and quit talking. We got to walk. Brian Keller was right one time a few years ago. Our union was founded on a fight and corruption. Well, you know what? I hate to say it. Time to pick up the fucking gloves, people, or at least the picket signs.
I agree.
Well, if you assemble in front of the convention, the media is already going to be there. So, you know, I'm not saying don't protest the Solid House, but I would damn sure hit that convention.
I'm going to Solid House, and I'm not encouraging anybody to fight. I'm going down there to have a peaceful protest. That's what I'm going down there for.
Do both of them, but I'll tell you what, the media is not going to come out to the Solid House. Because they wouldn't even cover the GM strike when it was going on. You got 200,000 people walking outside of Flint, Michigan, and they're not reporting it on the television. The only reason we know is because we were sending it back and forth through social media. So the news will be at the convention. Did you
get a number? We walk on solidarity tomorrow. Trust me, there will be news people there. Trust me, I guarantee you by 3 o'clock, if we have people. If there's only five or six of us, we ain't going to matter. It's numbers, people. We need numbers. For us retirees, it's our responsibility to be there while the day shift people can't be there. Remember that. We got to gamble in this fight, too. It's our history, our love for the UAW. And furthermore, I don't want to be paying dues for all these goddamn felons.
Right.
Nobody's going to promise to take those away, though.
Alleged. Alleged. You got to say alleged.
I don't know about alleged, but there's like 19 of them already that are getting a piece of the fucking pie,
no,
Don.
Now, I know that. I know that, but it sounded like you were talking about the current batch of people that are allegedly involved.
Well, thank you for clearing that up, because I didn't mean that in any way, shape, or way. I mean, nobody's... You know, I think there's a few more open indictments, but I'm just talking about those people should have lost everything.
Yeah, I got you, Jimmy. You're right. You got it.
Yep.
And me for everybody to be quiet.
Well,
for medical level, like I said, how can they have a contract with themselves for their own staff and special benefits? I mean, it's ludicrous that we pay these people. There's hell, we're paying for their own car washes. You know what? You're not that good. Look what's happened. We went from 1.6 million under this administration's watch down to less than, what, 350,000 for the Detroit 3? I mean, General Motors alone, we were over 1.1 million in 1979. Today, I believe we're the smallest of the Detroit 3. That's a damn disgrace to the UAW.
Jim, was that the PPA stage? Was that 70? hold on a second. Was that the year of the contract with the PPH days? Was that 69?
No, the contract with the PPH agreement was the 79 agreement.
79.
And then when we went to go into the convention after that agreement, Eastland, wasn't it? Eastland
no.
was set to take over, I believe. And all of a sudden, the Warren memo leaked out 2 weeks before the convention by somebody on Stephen Jokic's camp, I believe, from his local there. And Jokic stole the election. What happened really then is I think he took over for General Motors from Ford to GM. And when that happened, he got the presidency.
Yeah. And Roger Smith was the president of GM, and he wanted concessions because I was laid off. And I was laid off almost as much as I worked at that time. Almost went time for time, but I didn't.
Do you remember what year that was, Don?
What's
Me
that?
Me too, Don.
Do you remember what year that was?
1979 was I hired in June of 78, so I almost broke time for time. But they did concessions.
I know what you mean, Don. I was like 7 months of going from time for time. I had 9 years, 9 months, and them motherfuckers offered. What they offer is $1,000 a year?
I don't even know what it was.
Golden handshake, they called it.
Yeah. We were pumping over 70 trucks an hour and over 70 trucks an hour and got paid diddly for it. For months, we did that. And I had to build a... Go ahead, Paul.
I just want to say the thing that's really ludicrous isn't as much that our international executive board gets this kind of compensation, but what's really ridiculous is our local leaders that people put all their faith in go down to the convention and they know these people are worthless and they still line up in favor of whatever the International Executive Board is.
That's pathetic. That's why we need to make changes right down to our locals.
You're damn right.
We need to stop electing people who are politically ambitious as delegates because they'll sell their soul and yours to get a position or to be in good favor with the International Executive Board.
Yeah. Or get a nice build-up job or a nice around job looking at frames. That's what
a fantastic point.
They behave like they behave like teenage boys in the locker room. They got to be part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a really good point. And the thing about this bargaining convention that's coming up, we don't know who's going to be president depending on how they're mitigating the circumstances, if through protest or whatever, if it's going to be Ray conducting the convention or if it's going to be Sean conducting the convention. You know, everybody was expecting when they voted, the ones that voted for reform, that they wanted a real member-led convention.
Right.
And it doesn't matter at this point who conducts it. What's going to end up having to have to take place is if the members' real resolutions don't hit the floor, the same dissidents that pulled resolutions from committee and forced them to vote them up or down are going to have to do that same thing again. And the very nice thing about this is that this election is still fresh in everybody. You know, the taste is still in everybody's mouth, you know, through the way they pressured everybody. If they don't vote the right way on the floor, when it gets back to the local, all these local administrations are the ones that are the delegates. So what I'm getting at is, You can vote them out of office. If they take any action, because everybody's eyes are on what's going on, and if the reports that come back from this convention, like they did at the Constitutional Convention, you got the opportunity to punish them. You're either going to speak for us or you're not going to have a seat. You're going back to the line. And that's the disposition you need to take with your local leadership. You know, they pressured you into voting a certain way, and because it's actually a good thing because the way it played out, everybody would normally at this time coming into a convention, everybody be worried about bargaining. That's not the case. They just got done coercing, threatening the membership, just recent because of this election, walking right into a bargaining convention. And I think they just opened a can of worms.
Good point. Good point.
The other good thing about all of this is that the membership nationwide is starting to open their eyes and pay attention to what's going on.
You're right. You're right, yes. Steph. You're absolutely
the one
right.
The one thing that's hopeful from my standpoint is I was a voting delegate, rank and file member, didn't hold a position. They got elected against the Norwood Jewel machine twice. And the thing is, what I saw, there's a lot of kiss and rear at the Constitutional Convention, but when it comes to the bargaining convention, it gets more serious. At least some of the people from the smaller locals are willing to talk about real hard issues, and they're quite vocal.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Constitutional Convention is where you have all the fun. The liquor is flowing. The food's great. You know, the hobnobbing. But people, when they go to the bargaining convention, they know that the membership wants to get some results. And hopefully this will be a very hotly contested convention.
Agreed.
I can't wait.
Well, I hope
you said, Steph, all eyes are on them right now.
Hey, let's not forget about all this, too, that we can congratulate Daniel Pacente.
Yeah, absolutely.
For winning his run for Region 9.
That's right. Yeah.
And then about that, you know, I'd like to say that he is a member in good standing, and when he was vetted, the monitor made sure of that. And this is who we're talking about, right? The guy
right.
who's trying to say wasn't
right.
a member in
right.
good standing.
A lot of people don't know how they're protesting it right now, saying he's not a member in
right.
good standing.
It's just probably
that's already been a statement's already been made by the monitor to the contrary, that was actually discussed with the UAW prior to him running for election, and that it was agreed upon that he was a member in good standing. So again, that's another scare tactic on that list of five or six concerns in our Curry Solidarity team letter for their appeal. So that's already had a statement made by the monitor regarding that. So that's that he Dan Pacente won. Congratulations,
Dan. Feel that, aren't you? I mean, he didn't even win his own region. Think about that, people. And isn't that his region area out there?
True.
And he's going to steal it, man? This guy's – he ain't going to have a home to go back to in the UAW. He's crying like this unless we're going to buy – are we going to buy crying towels, Don?
Oh, yeah.
They're going to the White House.
Yeah, he'll head down.
Dan.
Do whatever he does in the White House.
You know, the interesting thing is Walter Reuther was never at Vancouver had there was a letter that was put out when he went to Russia to help them launch making Ford vehicles in the early 30s. And then he'd come back, and it's been obviously, you know, everything happened. He organized the automakers. And at the very end of his career, you know, Walter was blackballed. He couldn't get a job anywhere in Detroit. It seems very odd to me that the greatest leader that the UAW ever had, the one that produced all of the gains that were lost, because there's not been any historical gains since he's been gone, was
right.
never invited to the White House. And in fact, they took a letter that he wrote back to his family, and they modified it. It said something about he was pretty excited about being there in Russia. And later on in his career, like after it ended, they took that letter and they modified it. It's on file at the FBI right now. But they took that letter and they modified it and made added comments about making a greater to make it sound like he was a communist.
Yeah.
Dropped every appointment that was going to be offered to him, Hoover used that letter. They sent it out to all the company heads and to all of Washington to make sure that he never got a position in Washington. And when you've got a sitting president that's getting an open arm invitation into the White House during a time where there's a transition going on and the manufacturers are wanting to reduce 30% of the membership in one of his sectors,
right.
that should be a concern to you right there. You know,
yeah.
he's not getting an invitation to come to the White House because he's standing up for the membership. He's getting an invitation to the White House because he's not fighting them on their transition to EV under their global warming threat.
Hey, I want to... Yes, you just brought something up when you said their games. Hey, I need to reach out over bounds. Hey, we need some help tomorrow morning from you casino workers that are UAW. What about you educational people? Wear your warm clothes. I'm going to be in my shit. I'll see you down there at 9 a.m. We need some numbers, people. Are you tired of this shit? Take it away, folks. Go, Paul.
Yeah. Walter Reuther made a very interesting statement that our current leaders should look at. Very brief, he said that you could take everything that General Motors gave you and put it in your eye and it wouldn't make you blink. These auto companies don't give anything. Everything we got by fighting and everything we've lost by compromising.
That's right.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. Where are you guys from? GM, Ford, Chrysler?
I'm from GM.
I'm from GM.
I'm from Ford.
Nobody down here from Chrysler?
Yep, I'm still in. JJ's from, I work for Chrysler at Jeep.
Okay.
I'm from Ford.
All right, I just want to make sure there's all of us there.
Yeah, we got some Ford freaks in here, yeah.
Well, that's one thing I am. If you look at the ballot we elected.
Unfortunately, I think Ford set up better than anybody.
Whoops.
Think about it.
What'd you say?
The Ford company set up better than anybody.
Can't argue with that. But I
will. Yeah, Ford has the best contracts, and that's why when we vote, you see that a lot of the Ford plants in there will vote still in the Curry Solidarity way because they're happy with life.
That's because Ford makes them happy.
Well, they make them happy so more. They liked it because if you remember right, Ford had the light bulb. They had the better idea. They were the ones that got the big profit sharings, but they ain't getting that shit no more. You talk to that Ford people. They were real pissed off with this last round. Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people at Ford, sister. And I will tell you, I actually think General Motors' language in the contract was more stronger. But I will agree with you. The Ford workers seemed to always get the better bennies. I mean, hell, Jokic was the first one in 95, you know, and he got impotent, so you guys all got the pump in 95. Hell, we didn't get that until 2000. He was an LPG or whatever you call them back then.
Right.
Ford didn't file for bankruptcy.
Yeah, we didn't file for bankruptcy. We didn't take the government money. We also didn't report. Wait a minute. You did take the government money on the solar and battery cars, so back the hell up.
We're talking about back when, though.
We're not. Jimmy, you're absolutely right. I'm not talking about that. But I still think it's a shame that the government puts out that much funding for electric vehicle technology and stuff like that when they're not even going to get a return out of that money. Why would I invest in the future that I'm not going to get a return on?
Amen.
You've got to
watch out for Stellantis. It's not Chrysler anymore. You better watch out for Stellantis because they're going to throw lots of things off and we're not going to be part of the big three anymore.
The CEO of Stellantis is an evil, evil man, in my opinion.
You know what scares me about him and with Mary Barra going and bored with the truck? Think about this.
Hold on, Jimmy. Jimmy.
Okay, go.
KJ was talking. Hold on. Go ahead, JJ.
And not only do we have a evil CEO who's worse than Marchionne ever was, he loves moving stuff overseas, and he's moved three plants out of France to Africa because Africa is the new China for cheap labor. And he has no problem doing that, and I'm sure he's going to use that as a threat. The only problem is, if it's the majority of the money made by Stellantis was made here in the United States. So it's we've got the worst contract, the worst profit sharing. I mean, you know it's messed up.
No, we have a good profit share.
They make record profit, and my bonus, even though I worked more hours this year than last year, I got more bonus money last year than this year, and their profits were higher.
Wow.
So,
right. You better watch out for Stellantis. That guy's, yeah, right, you said it, he's evil.
He is.
I work for them. I work for Belvedere. Well, I did work for Belvedere.
I recognized your voice. What I was going for is, you know, way back when, somebody went to all three, one of them guys, and says, hey, let me make the trucks, you make the cars, and we'll all use the same engine, the same transmission. Now they got the EVs. You got Mary Barry, she's going for the EVs. Ford wants the truck market and the high-grade model, and Stellantis will probably take the low-end economy. I think they're selling us short there because, one, EVs are being partnered up with companies that are non-union people. Look at that. They're all closing, and I'll let it go at that with the batteries.
I don't know. How many out of GM? GM's got the subsidiaries. Chrysler has TPTs. And the majority of them are at the Jeep plant.
Yes, that's true. And that's because of the backdoor deal that was made on the work schedule that they work there. They don't work a traditional schedule. It's an alternate work schedule, and it's different than anybody else. They call it the 40-50-60.
That's very different from anybody else.
Yes, and they abuse the temps horribly there at Jeep. Sometimes these people work 3 days a week. Sometimes they're working 7 days a week.
Damn.
And they don't get breaks.
And they don't get profit sharing.
And they don't get profit sharing.
Oh, wow.
Even though they're an integral part of the success of Jeep, they get nothing.
Couldn't run without them, right?
And we currently, in order for them to run this 40-50-60 work schedule, and what that is, you know, you get to choose as a full-time employee what you want to work, 40, 50, or 60 hours. And you get to pick the days off that you want.
Oh.
And those days that you pick off, the temps have to cover.
Oh.
And so
GM's going to follow that.
Around, and the number of temps that they have to make this work is like 1,500 temps. And it's a constant revolving door.
1,500?
1,500.
That's crazy.
And guess what? Anybody from Belvedere can't transfer there. You got the high priority at Belvedere, and there's no place for us to go.
That's wrong.
I am that wrong. So wrong.
Very wrong.
Jeez, that's wrong.
And the new management that we just got, they want to try to take skilled trades from our traditional three shift, 8 hours to an alternate work schedule where you're seven on, seven off and copy what they're doing at, I believe it's Shap.
Mm.
And you've got the trades guys that are in an uproar over this. I mean, they're pretty upset that they're talking about this. And hopefully Sean Fain will stand against it. So they're trying to cut trade jobs as well because they know in order to work that alternate work schedule, they're going to have to hire more, and they're going to have to bring in more apprentices to be able to cover.
That explains why they brought in so many apprentices in Belvedere.
Yeah, they're trying to
do
this alternate work schedule with the trades. Yeah, and what it does, you're going to love this. They try to make it sound good, like, oh, you only have to work half a year because you're only working 1 week on, 1 week off, and you're getting the same amount of money. It's straight 40 hours, right? But what they're not telling you is that you're working an extra 112 hours a year.
So
you're working 1,080 hours. You're working 2,192 hours.
Can I talk?
Yeah.
Belvedere.
You're talking over me. Let him finish before you start.
Well, no, it's something he probably should know, because Belvedere took all their ETEs. They're not full-time employees, no pension, nothing.
Yeah.
And turned them into apprenticeships.
Oh.
Now you can continue. I'm sorry. I think you should know that.
Jeez.
Now you can continue.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Can you say that one more time?
All the temps in our plant,
yes,
there's not all of them, but there's a lot that turn into apprentices in different areas.
Jeez.
Well, they can be on the apprentice program just like anybody else can, as far as I know.
I ain't saying that, but
okay,
listen to what he's saying. Listen to what he's saying, what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's why it
fits
in with it.
The thing is that if you're a tradesman and you're working out of a union hall, whether you're an electrician or a pipe fitter or a millwright or tool and die maker, whatever the trade is, right? If you're working out of a union hall, you're making more money than we are.
Yep.
They're having a very difficult time hiring from outside to be able to cover these jobs. So they're trying to cut the jobs so that they can put those people to give the – so it'll put them as allegedly extra to fill some of these positions, because they know that they're not going to be able to entice enough outside help to be able to hire the amount of people that they'll need to cover that schedule.
Right.
Because the electricians out of the union hall are making, they're making like $47, $48 an hour in the hall. And they get a pension.
Yeah.
And they get health care, right?
It might
not be quite as good as ours, but they're still getting the pension and benefits.
And Social Security.
Yeah.
And their pension is better than ours, because their pension doesn't get cut like ours.
Right.
Yeah.
So those guys don't want to leave. They're going to take a pay cut, a almost $10 an hour pay cut. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, let me get Brian on before we got time.
How many people here at Stellantis, John, are outside contractors, and how many are still working for directly for the company?
We've always got outside contractors there.
They do it at GM too.
I usually see at least half a dozen every day.
You guys got to remember. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Brett.
Yeah.
you guys got to remember, though, that the alternative work schedule, even though that's in the international contract, it's the local that decides what schedule they're going to go with. So if what did you say you were on, 20, 40, 60? At Jeep?
Oh, for production, it's 40, 50, 60, yeah.
Okay, but that's negotiated on a local level, that schedule. So
yes.
it's the local leadership that has negotiated that divisive alternative work schedule. And so basically it's going to take Sean Fain to get rid of alternative work schedules across the board in order to make sure that that don't happen.
Thing is that Jeep will not negotiate a new contract because the new administration doesn't want that 40, 50, 60 because of the exploitation of the temps, and the plant makes or saves over $26 million a year because of that schedule.
So they're refusing the bargain, is what you're saying?
What's that?
Trying to open negotiations and they don't want to negotiate because the local structure doesn't want it, or at least that's what you guys are being told. Maybe that's just the excuse. I was under the impression that if they refuse the bargain, you can get the labor charge. They have to go to the state.
Yeah.
Not.
It should be, but I think the newly elected chairman is a little over his head.
Well, that's why everybody should be out in front of the Solidarity House tomorrow pushing to get Sean Fain sworn in so he can be part of this bargaining convention. So if there happens to be a contract demand and they're getting rid of alternative work schedules, he can address that. But if Ray Curry ends up being the head of this bargaining convention, you know, he's going to dictate what contract demands go across the table and what contract demands don't.
He's going to try.
And he's already allowed this.
No, but I'm saying that the delegates, just like they took the floor at the convention, took control of the convention at the constitutional convention, if Ray tries to try to table some of their demands, they're going to have to, they are going to have to go against them, pull them out on the floor and get them an up or down vote. You know what I'm saying? You can't just give up just because Ray gets it. You know what I mean? It's important that Sean does, but if he doesn't, remember, you're going to still have to react. Otherwise, you're going to take whatever they go ahead and decide that they're going to negotiate for you.
But he's already allowed them to do that. What do you mean?
Ray's
already openly allowed them to do that.
What I'm saying. I'm saying that you can't just lay down and think that just because Ray takes it, you give up and it's all you're going to have. They're going to have to fight. They're going to have to fight on the convention floor. You have to.
And
if you don't, your demands aren't going to hit the floor. They're not going to be on the table. They won't introduce them during bargaining. This is it.
No.
You know? I mean, hopefully Ray gives them.
But this is the problem. Most of the delegates that you have now, are from our previous delegates from the last election. And you know they're going to side up. They're going to side up with Ray Curry and whatever he, you know, requires. This is what we're going to do, and they're going to go along with it.
Well, they will try, and they might do that. But wait a minute. Local elections are here, and the people that do
wait
not
a
have
minute.
The
who the fuck are you? Well, wait a minute, Don. You want the Jerry Springer to know who the fuck is this ass clown?
Well,
you ain't nobody, homie. You took your
cookie
and your
son. You talking to me?
Fuck you.
I'm
done, couch.
Whoa.
Bye, Jim.
Anyway,
guys.
So let's get back to a normal level. If they try to bury the demands of the people, you still have the same demands. You know, I mean, you're going to just let them get away. You can't just let them get away with it. And the local elections are here. So if they don't act in the interest of the members, they're going to have to vote them out locally. They're going to have to show them you're going to be our voice or... And you're right, though. I mean, they do control the convention, and most of them are loyal to the caucus. So,
but the damage is already done. At that point, the damage is already done because our demands
are going to be heard at the bargaining, at the special bargaining convention, by the same people who are at the convention. And if they accept those or decline those, that's what you're left with. And that's what they're going to look at.
Right.
Unless
the
president calls for a special election or a special convention again.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
When did the alternate work schedule actually became part of the contract? I think that was in, was it 99 or the other word, the next contract?
I believe it was in 2009.
Before Motor Company, it was hidden. And the it was hidden in the 99 contract. It became where it was put in usage in 2003.
Ooh, okay. Because it was hidden in Chrysler's in 99.
Yes, they hid it.
Yeah.
They did not, they didn't even speak about it at all.
Right.
But it was there in the contracts, in the appendix part of the contracts. And I believe, don't hold me to this.
I'm not.
But it was somewhere around 2003 that it came outward. And that's when they started to use it. I know at Ford's they started going to these alternative work schedules where we call them A, B, C, D.
Right. That's what was hidden in the contract in 99 for all the companies.
Like I said, it wasn't out because most people missed that. They didn't see that was in the contract or in the MOU.
So when you got an AWS, they couldn't implement it until you lost overtime after 8. Because you can't have an AWS with overtime after 8.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm done.
Most of the alternative work schedules, especially if it was, as we called it, A, B, and C, they were 10-hour shifts.
Yeah.
Those were 10-hour shifts.
Yep.
Where you worked day shift, worked Monday through Thursday. Afternoons worked Tuesday through Friday. And the C crew worked Friday through Monday, two days and two afternoons.
Right. That was the worst thing that was ever invented.
Yes, and because those alternate work schedules are proven to be detrimental to employee health and safety.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
More injuries occur during alternate work schedule plants than regular traditional 8-hour shift work plants.
And when they did that, we could strike on health and safety.
Yeah, health and safety is supposed to be the number one priority of the union.
And it's not no more.
In actuality, it should be for the company also. I mean, they're real foolish in not thinking that health and safety is one of the priorities because every time you're injured, they pay.
That's right.
Not completely
average,
at our plant, they don't.
On average, each injury on average costs the company between $7,000 and $10,000 per injury.
At least. That's right.
But the company ain't losing no money because they got a set amount they pay for whatever happens, and that's that.
Well, they get creative accounting. They get to write off all kinds of stuff.
That's correct, too.
Yeah, they've got the creative accounting that the government allows them to do, to be able to write things off, but yet you and I, managing our homes, which are our business, because we're workers, we're not allowed to have those write-offs and such.
The UAW is government-controlled right now. And I agree with all you guys.
How do you figure that they're government-controlled? Explain that to us.
The monitor, you mean?
The monitor is government. The UAW tells you who to vote for. It all goes into one. And the government is in control of it right now, not the people.
Actually, it's the corporations. The corporations are paying the politicians off.
That's not necessarily not true. There is some truth to that.
The members
yeah.
have control. If they realize they want to go ahead and utilize their power, the members have the power. Somebody's got it backwards.
No, we do have the power, but the members have been so, you get this, you get that. You're lucky to have a job. You're lucky to have the benefits.
So far, they're going to hit a point where that's not going to work no more.
You got it way better than a lot of people. You should just be grateful to have a job. That mentality has been beaten into our heads for quite some time, but it's coming
that's
to an
true.
End.
You know,
no,
the
I hope it
people
is.
Aren't have
it's
a job
coming
anymore.
To
they
an end.
Low wage, they got all these low-wage earners, and people that never had anything have the willingness to fight. So as time goes on, that's going to change. They'll hit a point where that's it, regardless of who's in control. You know, if you deprive the people of the basic necessities of life, they have a tendency to stand up.
Well, and that's the tactic that they used to keep us divided, to continually perpetuate these concessionary and terrible contracts. So
right.
Now we're at a point where the lower seniority have been around long enough to now see a contract or two. And they're waking up to the fact that, you know, if we don't stand together and we fight together for equality and support one another in equality, we do have the power when we come together and they can't divide us anymore. That's when things will change because, you know, it was mentioned that, you know, if Curry gets in, he'll control the bargaining convention. And they, yeah, that's true. They'll vote the way Curry will tell them to. And there may or may not be good stuff omitted and might not make it to the table. But if we stand together, we've seen enough contracts now. People have been around enough. If we stand together and support one another, we can keep turning them down just like they did at John Deere.
That's right.
Just like the Teamsters did at UPS. You know, we can keep turning them down and shut them down.
As
not
long
do this.
Shut the whole
company down.
As long as there's a sign-on bonus, I don't see that happening.
I see it happening.
You know,
Brain, you're right.
You're always going to have people.
The problem is that you can't hold out for so long that people are on their last leg and then offer up a shitty contract. 7 weeks, 8 weeks, and we get our first offer. It can't be allowed anymore. Because then people are looking at that sign-on bonus and they're saying, I need it. I got to pay my bills. My family needs food. You know, they drag it out and they drag it out. Can't happen. We need to have a time limit on the first offer.
Well, it's not just that either. You know,
it's not just that, but that's a big part of it.
It is, but the sit-down strikers didn't think about getting behind in their bills. They were going to fight, no matter what.
That's it.
I understand
because
that, but I'm talking about these sign-on bonuses.
I know that, but because people have been programmed by propaganda that, oh, we're going to take your house and if you don't pay, you don't be a good citizen and do what you're told, we're going to take your stuff away from you. Well, no, they're not. Because if we all stand together, they can't take the houses of 500,000 people, a million people. When workers come together and they stand together in solidarity, we are the power. They have to bend to our will.
So do you have experience with a circumstance like that?
You're not sure?
No, I'm not being sarcastic. I mean where, you know, back in the day where they all stood together and, you know, for weeks and weeks and did the banks work?
Doing.
Pardon?
Right now, the Europeans have set an example time and time again. Right now, the French government wanted to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. Millions of workers walked off their job in protest. Millions of workers. Not just
not
couple,
even in the United.
Millions.
Okay. Can you expand on that? I'm really curious.
You also got something working in your favor that you never had. Now, in GM, during GM, people would work with you.
Jason.
Yeah.
You're not speaking into your phone. I can hardly hear you, man.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Thank you. Yes.
All right. You got some things working for you that you didn't have before. If you go back to 2019 strike, there were some things that happened that was indication because it was the first lengthy strike that had taken place in the modern day, you know, these times. And yes, the lenders were working with the people that were out on strike. There were some other things. Now, there was also predatory lending. There were people that were offering strike loans. So you can take out money, that way you could pay your regular bills out of. There's other things you can do too, but the international, that was something that we had discussed, and we'll see if Sean wins. But the international owns their own credit union. They own their own bank. I don't know if you know that. But it's possible to get, they should be offering loans to striking workers to help them cover, and not predatory loans with 50% interest rates. But the thing that you got working for you now that you didn't have in 2019 and that they didn't have back in Flint in 36 and 37 is they didn't have $500 a week strike pay. So the ones that are going to get really impacted are the people that are legacy, that have higher bills because you make more money, you spend more, so your bills are higher. So $500 a week would be hard to live off of, but if they do like they did in 19, you could work another job and still collect the $500. Okay, so that's one thing. And then you only have to save the enough money to make up the difference in your bills. So say if you used to make it $800 a week, well, now you're making $300 shortage, take $300 times enough to last, I don't know, 60 days, 90 days, whatever. Figure out how long you're going to have to survive and just take out, either take a loan from your 401k, which is a low interest loan, and then when you pay it back, you actually make interest off the money you did spend. Another one's a mortgage loan. It's a low interest loan normally, and it's stretched over 30 years. Just whatever you don't spend. Don't go out and live up life just because you got $30,000 sitting in your face, you know. Make it through the strike, and when you get done, you pay the money back that you have left over, which is hopefully it's a big chunk, you know. I mean, either way, you're gonna have to make the you're gonna have to do it. You know what I mean? Back like
well,
when Rick, John said,
hey,
they
Jason,
went, they didn't have nothing.
Jason,
yes.
You forgot. We all just got bonuses, especially Stellantis. We got a big fat $14,000, well, at least 14. I got a little bit more than that, but
yeah. Are you on overtime? A lot of plants are on overtime now too. Save your money right now. Don't wait till it's over. If you're not prepared and you get screwed, then you know. We got to be
prepared. I'm putting my money away. I'm going to be ready.
I can't put my money away.
I
got to move.
I had to take a $4 an hour pay cut to go to the apprenticeship.
Oh.
I thought, okay, no big deal. It's only $4. Well, turns out $4 is a lot more substantial than you think.
Yep.
But the dividends that it's going to pay off once I get my journeyman card and I'm making – and I top out and making journeyman pay, the benefits are going to far outweigh the little bit of suffering that I've had to do short term.
Right.
You can't look at short term. You got to look at the long term. You know, businesses like to put that crap all on the television and, you know, oh, well, this quarter and this quarter. I don't give a shit about quarter. Are you going to have a business plan that's going to make you be around for 100 years, 200 years, right? There's a successful business that can survive and continue to make money for 100 years. We've been making cars for over 100 years.
Right.
Cars
everybody's
are going
got
away,
their personal
especially
situation.
In the United States. But,
everybody's,
you know,
everybody's got their own personal situation, but you got to work it out. Now, young lady, since, you know, I mean, I get it, you're in transition from one plan to another, but, I mean, I would start looking at cutting my monthly bills down as much as you can right now to prepare, because whether you're ready or you're not, if you know, 1,000 of your brothers are holding a line and you weren't prepared because you didn't take steps to get prepared and you're suffering, it's going to be your fault. I mean, are you going to cross the line and go in and work? When everybody else is out holding the line?
No.
Well, I mean, then you need to make preparations.
And the other thing is we're a union. We're going to be there for each other. You know, I do farming on the side. I grow my own food. Whatever extra I have, if we do go on strike, I'm going to be sharing with my brothers and sisters to help out the ones that were in different circumstances than me. Right? We're supposed to be there to help uplift each other. That's how we succeed.
And not even being from GM, we came and we stuffed GM's pantry and we brought them load after load of basic stuff, body wash and stuff that you wouldn't even think of. So a lot of people bring food. You know, they bring,
I'm going to say something you guys ain't going to like.
What's that?
The UAW is a corporation in itself. Think about that.
That's true.
Can you hear me?
But
yeah.
Yes, we can hear you.
You are so right. They are a corporation. She's right. They are a corporation. They even look at themselves as a corporation.
Thank
That's
you.
That's correct.
That's
yeah.
the biggest
I
problem.
Agree.
No, the biggest problem is us not standing together because we are the power of this union.
Here
we can determine it.
And you're right there, too.
So you're we, but you're Chrysler, GM, Ford.
Well, that doesn't matter, really. What does matter is that we as the members, have allowed the people that are supposed to represent us not represent us. We have allowed those people to think that they are our boss. They are not our boss. We are the bosses. We are the employer.
Right.
The
and
members are
that,
the employer.
My father was part of the UAW. And, yeah, it was his boss because he could trust him.
Well, I don't know if you can trust them so much because they don't care whether or not you live or die. You can't trust the company, and you can't you really can't trust your union with those leaders that don't connect to you. They don't understand what poor workers are going through. When I was sitting at my local meeting tonight, you know what was really disturbing? They brought up a $5 pay increase. Like, it sounded like that was so much for people that they might, like, to bargain a $5 pay increase for people.
For who?
People that are in progression, people that are temporary people. Like, they think that if you do the math on that, that's not even normal. Do the math on what those people are making. Now, I'll tell you what, if people that are sitting on bargaining committees and they take a $5 pay increase, that still doesn't equal out if you're a new hire. That still does not equal out to a legacy worker's pay. It's ridiculous.
No, but they get $5 more.
But that's not right. It's equal
it's not
pay
right.
for equal work. We're a union.
That's what it should be.
But your locals don't look at it like that. They'll get your locals in your bargaining committees right now are basically saying, well, shit, we better put $5. Well, let's give them a little tidbit here. $5.
Yeah, the people that are in the union.
Are you kidding me? $5?
Well,
for the people that are in the union.
But don't forget, they have been trained. The ones that are elected have been trained by the administration that has been selling us out for 30 years. That's the mentality that they've been taught to have. It's up to us to say, no, that's not right. Equal pay for equal work, period.
That's right.
And that's what we need to stand for.
Yes.
Yeah, and so them saying in a union meeting at a huge local that $5, I just was like, are you kidding me? Is this ridiculous? Did I just hear this? So they're not even aiming high. They're aiming low. Because those people should be making just exactly what we're making.
Excuse me, ma'am. When you say they and they are saying something about a $5 increase, who is they that you're referring to? I guess I'm lost on that.
Well, they're basically saying that the people that are temporary or they've got so many acronyms for people now. So I guess
are you talking
they're talking
about
more of a...
They're talking about the contract?
Yes, the bargaining. Well, $5. $5. They should at least be making, we're going to put $5 in this mix. Well, what? Wait a minute. Let me understand this. So you're going to tell temporary people or people that just got flipped to full-time that you're going to go to the table with a $5 increase of pay? They're
well, that's
still
the
not going to be
tiers.
Making the same as legacy workers. You're still creating a division. That makes
right.
sense.
So the union's creating that.
And the temps get to vote, and we have all these different tiers. We're all going to vote on these contracts, and we all have different
right.
goals, obviously.
Right.
So how is it fair
right.
that we all vote on the same contract?
No, it's not. They're going to vote for the bonus every time, and who can blame them, really?
Yeah, but here's the real problem with that. It's not if it's $2. It doesn't matter if it's $5. What happens is right now, and just like they did in previous contracts, they are selecting or targeting certain segments within the same membership and offering them things because now, right now, the in-progression and temps outnumber the legacy workers. So we'll give them $5 an hour. That sounds great, but then – the legacy worker's like, wait a minute, I haven't seen an increase in 14 years. So now the whole premise behind them being able to target certain segments, whether it be skilled trades, whether it be in progression, whether it's one over the other, no. That's how they divided the membership to begin with.
They did that when they did the two contracts ago, when they brought the tier two, the in progression worker, the tier two, I'm going to call it tier two. When they brought them in, if you remember right, they left on a Friday. They come back on a Monday with a $9 an hour pay raise by voting yes on the national contract. Who's not going to vote themselves a $9 an hour raise?
Right. Even if they're selling the rest of the membership out.
And then the last contract, if you remember right, was all about the temporaries. The new temporary language in the tier 3, 4, and 5 they created.
Right. Right. They knew that they were outnumbering the legacy at that point. So now we're going to go ahead and give it to them. And nothing went to the legacy, pretty much. Just the regular standard.
Let's not forget about the Chrysler where they decided the EETs that were hired in a certain time would be Tier 1, and that never got signed in.
That's
well,
awesome.
Let's not forget, let's also not forget that in the bankruptcy, after the Great Recession, when they asked for those concessions, both the companies, General Motors, Chrysler, and the UAW leadership all said that we're going to make you whole again once we get back on our feet. Well, they
yeah.
had 14 consecutive years of getting on their feet. Record,
yes,
exactly.
By way of record numbers. So they owe us our equality back. Not to mention, not just making us all equal pay for equal work, no more tiers, but the cost of living has increased over 20%. So we
no
need to have
living.
a minimum of a 27% pay increase by the end of the contract. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, they're cutting 30% of the workforce. They made over $150 billion last year. So, I mean, right now they're creating a financial crisis and making it look global in the news. And
that will
things,
never
things
happen until we're all making the same pay.
It'll never happen.
It'll never happen unless we all make the same pay.
What?
Well,
never happen.
When I asked one of the bargainers tonight what resolutions got passed and what they cherry picked at our local, on a local level, you think I could get a straight answer?
You couldn't.
We're still rewriting it. What do you mean? What do you mean you're still rewriting it? I mean, I came to union meeting to find out what resolutions got passed, what you guys are taking to the table next week. What the hell?
Whoa.
There was no answers.
Do you realize that Belvedere can't even, we're not a union anymore? We can't.
They need to report
anything
back.
That from Belvedere does not go there.
Well,
where's
hopefully it'll change.
It needs to be outlined in the Constitution during this time of the year or during contract time that the locals are to report to the membership which resolution. They tell us, you go to your union meeting because that's where they tell us.
Right.
I've been to some of them, not too many of them, because
well,
I don't
that's
like
probably for their,
my union.
Yeah, they're probably
I'm just wondering
there.
What the frick you're taking down next week to negotiate. On a bargaining level, what are you taking down there? And why is it a secret? Because I should know a week ahead of time coming to this union meeting what you knuckleheads are going to be taking down there just for this local.
Right.
Well, our
what
local
kind
said
of
we can't take
is
nothing.
That?
We Did have
I
no...
Hold on, guys.
Excuse me, Miss. I don't know what your name is, so I'm going to call you Miss Belvedere. Please do not interrupt other people speaking, okay?
Okay. No
okay,
problem.
So that everyone gets their opportunity. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Go ahead, Carrie.
No, I just, I think it's not just the international that has their foot in their ass. It's the local. It's a huge debacle. It's a hot train wreck. It's a smelly fart.
Carrie, you're not
it's
just now realizing that.
No, I'm not
okay.
just realizing that.
Okay.
It's so disturbing that, I mean, I just wanted to put my hands on my face and be like, are you kidding me? I mean, I think that's why people don't even like to go to their union meetings, because when you go there, you get no answer. You get a lot of huff and fluff.
And they shut you down if you try to say anything they don't want to hear.
Exactly.
Well, and part of that is because of membership ignorance. And I used to be
Absolutely.
Guilty years ago, right? And I got mad. And when I get mad, I start to do my homework.
Right.
And you know, after 13, almost 14, 14 years now of being active in the union, I still don't know it all. I still have a lot to learn. But the things that I have learned is that there are requirements by law, federal law, not just state law, because there are some state laws that apply to dues-paying organizations and the rights that you have for the state of Michigan as well. But the National Labor Relations Act spells out what the unions are responsible for giving their membership as far as the information and access to information. You have the right to those things and to know what's going on. They cannot hide that from you. And if they do, they're breaking the law. They're breaking federal law. And some of these representatives, because they're either inept or insecure in their positions because they're not doing a very good job, are too stupid to know the law and to know that they're breaking it. So sometimes, you know, you need to do your homework and you need to put them in check and you need to let them know, because I've let mine know that we've got an issue that we had in the past at my old local, at my old unit, where they didn't want to give me the contract books, all of them. They, oh, well, you just need this one. I said, no, I want all of them. I am requesting, formally requesting, all of them. Well, we can't do that. I said, you will do it because it's the law. And if you break the law, I will pursue charges against you. And they didn't know what I was talking about. They had to look it up. And lo and behold, I got the copies of all of the contract books. So part of the problem is that we don't know. And so you've got to get angry and you got to do your research. We have the power to force them. Some of them don't know it. Some of them use tactics to try to take that power and keep that power from us by keeping us ignorant. Well, you got to be more determined than them. And if you don't know where to send somebody, because there's a lot of people like us that are willing to share information and to help brothers and sisters get on the right track.
Amen.
Right.
And always, you know, keep in mind, your contract, I don't care what contract the UAW comes up with, does not ever supersede a federal, state, or local law.
That's right.
It cannot do that.
Correct. That's why the contracts, before they are approved and finally approved, go before, I believe, the Department of Labor. There's two entities that they have to go through before they can get a final approval.
That's one of them. You're right.
To back up what Adrian's saying, because if it cannot abrogate any law, state or federal or local, it can't. You know, that's just wrong. But on the temporaries, this is my opinion. I don't think the temporary should be allowed to vote on the contract.
No.
Okay? And I'm going to tell you why.
I agree with
their
that.
Their title is temporary. It's not seniority. It's not something else, not in progression. It says temporary.
Right.
Which means you're not here for the long haul. You're temporary. You're not permanent. You're the opposite of permanent. You're temporary. That
you
was,
have no, you're saying they have no stake.
I don't think they should pay dues either.
Well, see, yes, now here comes the catch 22. Now, I thought this, and I lost my appeal to the International Executive Board on this. They say because they pay dues, they will not be disenfranchised. Okay? So you guys, the National Executive Board, set this up so they can get these temporaries to pay union due and they get their COLA rollover to go into the VBA. They don't get a pension, but they're allowed to vote on a contract that has pension language on it. Our pension language is in there. Not theirs. They don't have one. But yet they're allowed to vote on that contract. So
right.
I say then they'll only be allowed to vote on that part of the contract that pertains to them, not to us. Well, they won't do that. So somebody's made the deal with all these temporaries coming into all these plants. They're getting the dues money. They're getting the COLA rollover. And that's all happening right now. And it shouldn't be allowed. It just shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. And that's something Sean Payne's going to have to definitely address.
But that's the law. They get to vote because it's the law. If you pay dues, you have the same rights as every dues-paying member.
And I understand that. But there's no reason why they can't split the contract and have two separate contracts, a contract for active workers and a contract for temps.
Agreed. That is absolutely...
Just like they used to do for skilled trades. Skilled trades used to have their own contract.
Hear, hear.
Exactly.
Then how do you figure out if you're going to keep working or not? Both of them have to pass?
Well, I see what you're saying. Yeah, usually both contracts would have to pass. Back in the day, if skilled trades... at one time could override what the production worker was doing.
That's correct.
They had that much power at one time. So
I don't think they should have to pay dues, and I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, that gives the union an incentive to get them hired because they get too comfortable with these temps. You know, we've got 1,500 temps. If we replace those with X amount of permanent jobs, it's just gotten out of control, and they still get the dues. They don't get represented. In my plant, they do not get represented, a handful of them maybe.
Right.
And then when it's time for an election or anything coming up, they'll do these orientation after orientation of new temps. And guess what they talk to them about at the orientation?
Election.
Election.
Yep.
We're going to have we have a vote coming up. By the way, I'm Ryan Mahoney. I'm the president here. And I'm going to do this for you, and I'm going to do that for you. And they abuse the system.
And this is the problem.
They let them go.
If the temps don't pay any union dues in a union shop, you're going to have union members working alongside scabs.
Yep.
And so that's where we need a separate contract for SBU, skilled trades, hourly and temps. And if one of their contracts are not ratified and they end up going out on strike, guess what? The plant still don't operate until management agrees to the terms of their particular contract, meaning it's going to force the company to agree.
What about local elections, Brian?
Right.
I mean, as far as them being able to... Because they're paying union dues, they should have a right to still be able to elect their local officials.
Yeah.
When they hire,
are you speaking in terms of them running for office?
Right.
No, I'm just talking about them voting on our contract as far as work schedules.
There's a difference between elections. There's a difference between elections and voting on a contract. They're two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
They're choosing the leadership, though. They're choosing your leadership. They'll hire 300 and 500 people they don't need to get the people that are, you know, buddied up with the management locally just to get them elected so they can keep people that are pliable in office. And it's, why should they be voting on your local leadership? You know,
you cannot suppress their vote as long as they're paying union dues.
Well like you said, Brian,
shouldn't
they have some sort of system.
Yeah. Well,
and most of those people that are, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's why she said they don't pay union dues. Then they're not choosing your leadership. And then General Motors, when it comes to contract time or Chrysler Ford, is not paying bonuses to temporary workers that might be there for 6 months. Because you've seen a cycle happen over and over, whether it's an election or whether it's a contract.
Mm-hmm.
The company hires additional people they don't need just to get the vote, to pass the vote, and then to get rid of
right.
them. So
yeah, every time
you know,
every time Scotty ran for office, a whole slew of new hires came through, right down to the basement and voted. And guess
right.
they were told who to vote for. A whole
yeah,
slew.
That's why we're going to get you a job permanent, and then they let them loose afterwards.
That's right.
Well, you
so
know,
what's,
Brian.
So what you're suggesting? Your suggestion is sitting there saying that they don't have a right to vote, but by law they have to pay union dues, because if they don't pay union dues, half the shop, if not majority of the shop, is scabs, and the small majority.
Brian, don't you have scabs
yeah.
working in your facility? Don't you have other outside contractors working in your facility now? They're not
yeah.
core members.
Well,
would you let them vote on your contract?
But they're not doing the same job as you.
No, but see, but that's the thing. They're not paying union dues.
Well, Brian's right. The jobs bank needs to come back because they're using the temps in lieu of the jobs bank.
They absolutely.
Are. You, look, that's what's going on.
Can you
and
explain that? At my plant, they put all the new hires into that electric vehicle plant when they hired in. So now the union's giving themselves props out because they just flipped those people. But they just had a layoff for weeks on end over in that building where those new hires weren't even eligible for unemployment. They had to flip
right.
them.
Right.
And that's the other thing, is they could let people who are laid off from other facilities flow into these plants, but instead they have 1,500 temps, so they can't flow in. And then they end up hiring the temps before the people who are on the street.
Right.
Because of
well,
the progression crap.
Well, here's the other thing. If they would have done inverse layoff, those people that were laid off in that one building would have been working in the other two buildings, three buildings.
Right. Right.
But they didn't do inverse layoffs because they don't want to fight for nothing.
You know how you handle the temporary situation? I knew a shop chairman that did this, and he was successful at this at a local level. And why they didn't mirror that to all the locals, I have no idea. Well, I do. Money. What this local chairman did was, because if people want vacation time or time off or going home early or whatever, what he did was he said, you'll carry 14.3% of every department. You'll carry that amount in ARs. That way, or AROs, however, whatever you want to call them. That way, and I saw this, nobody would deny vacation time. Nobody was ever could come in and not be able to go home early if they wanted to. Because he had all these extra ARs. And if there was time everybody come to work and he had all the extra bodies, they'd go from department to department giving mass breaks. And I'm talking like 20 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes at a time for about the whole shift. And there was no need for temporaries. And they said, well, we have a major influx from the end of May to the end of August. They would hire temporaries local like we used to, the summer help, if we needed them. Why can't we do that? Why can't we address the temporaries? This the situation like this, and these people are getting paid the same wage we're getting paid. Just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Why not? What, who was
you
it?
Know,
was that you, Scott, that said that was about if they're paying union dues, they have a right to vote?
Brian said that, and he's right. They call that disenfranchisement. Because they pay dues and you don't let them do something, then you're disenfranchising them. And
I get that. I get that. But I can cite two unions that do not allow temporaries or new hires to, regardless, they do get union representation after their 90 days within these unions, but they're not allowed to vote on contracts, and they're not allowed to vote on national leadership, and they're not allowed to vote on the local leadership unless they've finish. Unless they've gotten their initiation fee paid, and the way they've got it set up, it takes 2 years. So you're guaranteed that anybody that votes on your language is somebody who is going to be there.
You know what? Everybody's making this more difficult than it has to be. All they have to do is renegotiate the terms of temps and have them rolled over within 90 days like it used to be.
Here you go.
That would simplify it.
I don't know why we're making this so difficult.
Right. Oh, that ends it off.
No, it's not. We got about 8 minutes.
But when you're working with local bargainers and local leaders and international that aim low, and they're company people, I mean, Brian, it makes sense. After 90 days, you should be full time.
Absolutely.
You
well, not just
so,
that. Look, we got a whole slate of new people in there.
Well,
right.
They're not, you know, a whole new slate. So, I mean, let's give them a chance. You know, let's tell them what we want. And if they don't do it, then we put pressure on them. And if they still don't do it, then we remove them.
Here's the problem with that, though. We got a new slate of people. You got a president waiting in the wings. You're going to have the outgoing president look like he's going to go to the bargaining convention. And all those demands that we had for, like what you said, taking the tier system gone, making people whole after 90 or 100 days, all that language that could be there, he could toss at the convention.
And that was the purpose of us organizing out in front of the Solidarity House tomorrow to put pressure on the monitor to swear Sean Fain in and have Ray Curry concede.
Right.
Brian, I was going to ask you to bring that up because we're at the end of the show. If you could bring that up one more time, you had it scheduled for Monday through Thursday. Can you talk more about that? Because we are running out of time on the show, like Don was saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so we scheduled the protest out in front of the Solidarity House on 8,000 East Jefferson, and we're going out there for the purpose of protesting the delay in this runoff election so we can get Sean Fain sworn in before Thursday of next week so he can be at the helm of the bargaining convention. Because, like Scott said, if Ray Curry ends up being at that bargaining convention, then he's going to dictate contract demands, go across the table, and which ones don't. So we got to press for Ray Curry to concede, and we got to force the monitor to declare Sean Fain the winner and have him sworn in by Thursday. That's the purpose of the protest tomorrow. And that protest is going from Monday through Thursday between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m., meaning afternoons and midnights can be there during the morning hours to lunchtime hours, and then when days gets off, they can be there in the evening hours.
Right.
And something to be said along with this too, Brian, just to add with the situation with the challenge ballots, 1,608 that were challenged, and the roughly 600 or just over that have been sent back to Dayton and do not have a set time based on the monitor's fifth report to the court, and that there is not a set time to resolve that. Those ballots are being considered ballots that could still run the direction either way on the final outcome. Aside from any protests, we're going with just the ballots, that those ballots remaining can flip by a extremely slight margin, but right now with the ballots that were counted from the challenge ballots and verified, that those took the majority, the 640-something majority lead by Fain, and dropped it down to 505, according to the monitor's report. The Sean Fain led by 505, according to the monitor's report, and that those ballots that are remaining still could tip in either direction, but yet they've been sent back. So this protest means something, and it's for all sectors. It's not automotive only. It's all sectors. This is for your international UAW president, people. Let's
well,
make
not
this
to
happen.
Say, look, we're paying the monitor. That monitor has had several weeks to get this done, and they're stalling. The financial secretaries at the locals are stalling by providing that information. So it's going to be up to the membership to, you know, to say, hey, enough's enough. If you don't get out there, you guys get what exactly what you deserve this contract if Ray Curry ends up leading this bargaining convention.
We have to put pressure on them. So everybody needs to invest in their stuff and get out there and say enough is enough.
Well, hopefully the
solidarity was proven.
Brian just presented is what happens. Hopefully he goes ahead and does the right thing and concedes and just lets the membership get on their way.
Solidarity was expressed on referendum vote. Solidarity was very much expressed on the strike lines in 2019.
Right.
We had to have solidarity before and after that and now, and not wait until a bargaining convention, not wait until one of us is on strike or we lose another plant like Belvedere recently. We should not wait to have solidarity when there's chaos.
Amen, that's, brother.
That's right.
Because I'm going to tell you right now, I was on the strike line for 6 weeks in 2019. And that was the most solidarity I have seen widespread. And that was history. We're in a historic moment right now with this one member, one vote. It's on the iceberg of having a new international president. We just had our last regional director spot taken by a reform candidate. The ball's in our court.
Yeah.
Brian's been right. The ball's in our court. The matter of perception. We know that things have been screwed up. We can't continue talking about that. We need to move forward. We need to address what is right at our door right now, and that is a delayed action on the call for our new president to be elected and sworn in.
Here. You said in the district, Jesse. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
That's right. That's right.
It
You're
is welcome.
Definitely is history.
Minute left tonight.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's make all of our predecessors proud of us. Let's make all of our predecessors proud of us.
That's right.
1937 forward.
Oh, yeah. We'll be back next Sunday night. Hopefully, we'll have Sean Fain as president on the 26th. 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Don't you know that you can stop me? Night off. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. All right. All right.
All right.